Hello and welcome to Secondhand Film Critics, your favorite source for mildly pretentious, semi-uneducated, and highly unqualified opinions on movies. I am Noah, and as always, I am joined by...
Kayla.
This is the first episode of summer, kind of, question mark? I mean, it's like May. It's summer-ish.
And it's supposed to start getting warm this week, like... For me, it's supposed to be in the 70s here, so this is kind of the first feeling of the warm season upon us.
Yes, yes. I was going to do this after we did the question of the week stuff, but I think since we're already talking about summer, we might as well just do it now. Just like an update on like what our summer will look like for the podcast. So we have a lot of like all like the big releases planned for reviews. Not everything, but we're trying to hit like the big ones. So obviously like the Marvel movies, Lightyear.
Of course.
I think we're going to do Nope, which will be fun. Maybe we could do like a Jordan Peele ranking with that one. I would have to rewatch Us, but that might be fun. Yeah. Cuz now once you have 3 movies, I think it's like you can start ranking them. And then we also have our summer series, which do you want to just remind everyone what our summer series is?
Yeah, so this year we'll be doing something that feels a little more summery than Star Wars, which we did last year. We'll be doing the Summer of Wes, being Wes Anderson, of course, yes. One of our favorite directors. And so starting the first week of June, and then we'll go through the first week of September, because we had to fit all the movies in.
Yeah, there's a lot of them now. There's 9, right? 9?
Yeah, there's a lot.
So 9 or 10.
We've got a lot of ground to cover, but it's going to be very fun, so you can definitely expect some great conversations about those movies from us.
Yeah, I'm excited to rewatch them. I'm gonna rewatch them all at least.
Definitely.
And try to maybe get a fresh ranking.
And this last Criterion flash sale, I bought some of the ones that I didn't already have, so that I could like really get into it.
Yeah, I now own all the Criterions. The only one I don't own is Isle of Dogs, because I'm like, at this point, I mean, it's like one of my least favorites anyway. And at this point, it's like, they're going to probably release it on Criterion like in a year, I would say, or 2 years. Yeah. So it's like, why not just wait? I mean, it's not like I really like it that much. So
sure.
But we'll get into that. We'll get into the ones that we like and the ones that we like less. It will be fun. I'm excited to get into that. But first, we have to do this episode, which we always like to start our episodes answering or reading the answers to last week's question of the week, which was, what is your favorite movie that breaks the fourth wall? And we got actually a lot more answers than I was expecting to get for this question.
Yeah, we got a lot.
I know. Like, you guys just like fourth wall breaks, I guess. And yeah. That's great.
I'll start us off here. We got 3 people said The Emperor's New Groove. So Bryce, Sandy, and Waffle all said Emperor's New Groove, which is pretty fun. That is a very fun movie.
Yeah, it is. I think we mentioned that one, but I think it's one that I kind of sometimes forget is a fourth wall break movie.
Yeah.
Because it's like so integral to the movie that it just feels like natural, which is good. That's how it should be, I think. Let's see, one here, I'll just mention another one that we got multiple of. We got 2 mentions of Deadpool. Hunter just mentioned Deadpool 1, and then Gene mentioned just both of them. And so, you know, it's like I would consider them kind of like one and the same, you know.
Yeah.
I definitely agree that the first one is better. I don't really like either of them that much, but if I had to pick one, I would pick the first one.
I actually have not seen those movies.
Either of them?
Either of them.
Wow. I mean, you're not really missing much, but it's surprising that you haven't seen even the first one.
The first one came out in 2016.
And then the second was 2018, I believe.
Yeah, so both of them came out when I was like doing college stuff or just busy. And I think my brain was like, I don't care enough to go to the theater to see this movie. And so that was why it just, and then after the fact, I didn't actively want to see it, you know?
Yeah, maybe we'll have to make you watch them for when the third one comes out.
Oh, yeah, we could do that.
I mean, again, it's going to be, I don't know if many people will be happy with that one, because I don't really like that movie, but I don't know if, like, what is the read on that, though? Is, like, do people, have people said they don't like that now? Because I remember it was really, really popular, but, like.
It was.
I think it's more popular now, like, I see more people not liking it anymore, so I feel a little more in the right mind about that one. I like Dan's answer here. He said, Enola Holmes, just kidding, Fight Club. You know, so
that movie was not that bad. I think it could have been. Did you see it?
I did not see it.
It's based on a book series. I think it mostly just didn't. The fourth wall breaks didn't work for it.
Yeah, I didn't even know that it had fourth wall breaks.
Yeah, it's like she's doing something and then Millie Bobby Brown, that is, and then turns to the camera and says something to the audience about
that
her.
Doesn't sound like it works.
Yeah, it's not. I think they're making a second one. It's definitely not the worst movie in the world, but it's not great either. Very mid.
Have you ever seen the movie Top Secret with Val Kilmer?
No.
It has three directors. Wow. Because we got that answer on Twitter. I haven't seen this movie. It's a spoof of spy movies, apparently, where a rock star helps a woman free her scientist father from fascists. So, you know, that's not the worst thing that you can help someone do.
Sounds kind of funny.
Yeah, I like, it's from the 80s, you know, the classic, there's a lot of like spoof stuff. Another spoof we got is Monty Python and the Holy Grail. God Jester put that one in, which that one's a good choice as well. I don't remember if the other movies break the fourth wall, but I know that one does, yeah, and that's a good movie. I don't know if I like it as much as other people like it, but it's still very funny. Maybe I'll have to watch it again. We should do a Monty Python episode.
I would be so down.
Yeah, that would be fun.
Zach from Godfellas said High Fidelity.
Have you seen this one?
I haven't.
I haven't either. I do know it is popular. I've heard of this one more, so it's better than I can say for Top Secret.
Well, maybe we should do a We Never Seen of this movie sometime.
I think we could put it on the list because we have a running list of those. So, one of the movies I don't think we're going to be doing or we've never seen on is Gremlins 2. Not any disrespect to Mike.
Well, I've
just
seen
don't
it,
think it's. I
so...
don't think. Oh, okay, so there you go. I've not seen this. I don't mind the first one, so it's not like I wouldn't want to see it. I've just never seen it before. How do you think the fourth wall breaks are in this one?
I don't remember.
Oh, okay. So not great. No, I'm
yeah.
just joking. we also got Wolf of Wall Street, which I was expecting one person to say Wolf of Wall Street. Yeah, and I think the fourth wall breaks are fine in that. Martin Scorsese is good at fourth wall breaks, I think.
One other one we've got, or two from Dan, is he gave us a couple lesser known films that have fourth wall breaks. But he says at the very end of The Opposite of Sex, the main one of the characters says, as a narrator, she turns right to the camera and tells us all to go away.
So it's like the narration fourth wall break, which we were talking about in that episode. Like Buffalo did that a lot.
And then he also said his favorite is a short film, it looks like, that was Academy Award nominee. 2000?
Yeah, the Don Hertzfeldt, I think that's how you say his last name. This is Rejected. I haven't seen this one. I've seen, obviously, the It's Such a Beautiful Day. I've seen that one.
Yeah, same.
And that movie is fine. I don't know if I like it as much as other people. I don't know. It's like the animation style isn't really for me. But this one is shorter. So, you know, maybe it's worth checking out. Yeah, it's only 9 minutes.
Yeah, and it's fun to get a short film in there, since obviously that may be harder to break the fourth wall in since it's shorter and there's less room for it.
And animated, which the only other one we got with that was Emperor's New Groove, I think, right?
Yep.
So there you go. Lots of choices for everyone to watch movies with fourth wall breaks. Yeah, I think we should move on, though, to our episode at hand.
Yeah,
which
definitely.
Is a little, just kind of just going to be a loose time where we're just going to go over the movies that we've watched so far this year. This is obviously not going to be a comprehensive list. If you want to see every single thing we've watched this year, Both of our Letterboxd are in the show notes, so you can just go to our accounts and click diary, and then they're literally all there. But these are just like a selection of ones that we've picked. We're discounting movies that we've watched for the podcast. Oscar movies, just because like we've talked about the Oscar movies from last year enough. And just like also just some older releases that we don't want to talk about. So we'll talk about all the new 2022 movies we've seen, and also then some of the older not 2022 movies that we just want to talk about. That's kind of what we're going into this with. So
cool.
I think we should just jump right into it. We're just going to go, the order will be like, I'll go, and then you'll go, and then we're just going to maybe, some of the months we've watched, like, both watch the same movie, so we'll talk about those at the end, and we'll just go month by month. So this is January, the first month of the year, if people didn't know.
Oh.
So just in the old category, the not 2022, my first watch of the year was Dial M for Murder. I don't know why I picked this one. But you always gotta like pick a good movie at the beginning of the year, because it's always going to be on your stats page, and it's always going to say this was the first movie I watched in 2022.
I always try to close and start with a good movie.
Yes, that's the goal. And this one was good. Hitchcock is definitely kind of hit or miss for me. He has to be like the right balance of the comedy and the drama, I guess. I don't know. Or like, because sometimes I think the subtext or the more serious elements can overtake the more comedic elements, which I do like. But also sometimes he can lean too much into the comedy. But this one had a nice balance of like being a pulpy, just murder mystery, while also having some of that more social commentary underneath it. Which it was a great balance of that. Other ones I want to talk about, I watched The King of Comedy finally, because it was streaming and it's never streaming. That was good. I don't really have much to say about it. I might write a blog post about though, because
really
I think because it's kind of like the character is very similar to like Goodfellas, like they kind of follow the same path, but then they have like different outlooks at the end of it. I don't know. It's hard to explain, but I think it'd be interesting to compare those two characters.
Yeah, an infamous blog post of ours.
Yes, right. Our two blog posts. I'm going to hopefully write one this summer. Now that I have a little more time, I'll hopefully get one in there. Maybe it'll be that one. I also wanted to mention Gas Food Lodging, which is a pretty small movie that I watched on the Criterion channel. I'm not sure if it's still on there. But this was very good. It kind of gave me like Lady Bird vibes a little bit, or like coming of age, because I think she's almost like in like getting out of high school. I think she might be like in her last year of high school. And it's just about like this mom and her two daughters, teen daughters, who are like living in New Mexico in like this really like abandoned town. And I thought really good. And I think that the acting was surprisingly good for how low budget it was. But it didn't like feel low budget. I don't know. It was a good movie and I would definitely recommend it. It is woman directed, so it's always good to check out those that are smaller as well. And it's from the 90s, a great decade for movies. These aren't really new movies, cause they kind of came out in 2021, but I'm just going to include them here anyway, cause they were like on the verge. I watched Benedetta, which was good. Don't think that it's for everyone, but I think it was, definitely worth watching at least once. And then I watched Sing 2, which, you know, was the best movie of the year. So it was actually not that bad. Like the first, I actually don't mind the first movie. I think it's like not terrible. And this one was like a little worse than the first movie. So, you know,
did you see it in the theater?
I did not. No, I unfortunately did not get that experience, but you know, it's fine. Maybe there'll be a re-release when I'm like 35 for the anniversary, but
I think they do those movies a lot, though, for, like, at least AMC does Sing for the $5, like, fan favorites.
Yeah, the $5. Yeah, maybe this summer I'll be able to get out there and right my wrong.
Oh, that's funny. So in January, I was mostly watching 2021 movies, like, for end of the year stuff. So I didn't get a lot of other watches, or I was rewatching other stuff. So the one I have is Shadow of a Doubt, which is a Hitchcock film. And
wow, we both watched a Hitchcock movie?
We did. Wow.
Wow.
And it was good. I really like Hitchcock, and I've been meaning to like go through a bunch of his films and reestablish like a new ranking. So it's kind of been a little scattered, but I'm going to try to do a couple more this year. But this one really surprised me. It was really interesting. The way that he builds suspense in, like, this character who the family loves, and then he comes and he kind of infiltrates the family and turns out to be this sneaky, like, bad guy.
Sneaky bad guy.
Yeah, it was really good. It was right up there in the top of, like, my favorite one, so. And the new thing I watched is I watch a lot of TV, and so I have a couple of TV shows in my lists here on out, but I felt like this counted more as a movie-ish. It's El Defo, which was an Apple TV miniseries, but the episodes were like 25 minutes, so really, and it's all linear, so it really is a movie, and I don't really know why they made it a TV limited series instead of a movie. But this is based on a graphic novel that I read a couple years ago, a pretty popular novel. And this was, like, really, really good because the novel is about a kid who... It's pretty much a memoir from the lady who wrote it, of a kid who gets sick and then goes, like, deaf in their ears and kind of how they're going through that. And the way that they did the audio in the show was so interesting because from the perspective of the deaf character, they did a lot of like muffled audio and like tinny sounds and stuff. And it was just really interesting to see that in like a kid's show format. And I think is really good representation for kids who may be watching it and be able to learn a little bit more about that. So
where did you watch this on?
It's an Apple TV original.
Ah, they never advertise those. Like I never hear about them until like someone talks about them. Like I don't hear about them from advertisements or anything.
Yeah. I only briefly saw one, they released one clip, like behind the scenes clip of the author talking about it. And she was very heavily involved in the show too. And it was cool because since it was a graphic novel, they basically used the direct animations of the characters from the graphic novel and translated it into the show. So that was really cool too. But I would recommend it for anyone who wants like a quick watch.
I just wish that Apple TV Plus like was better at promoting their stuff because they do have like good content on there, but they just never talk about it. Like there was the new Charlie Brown short that you like told me, and I was like, I literally didn't even know this was coming out.
Yeah.
Like why are they not telling people? I don't understand.
Yeah, and like the only reason I knew I saw that it had come out was because I was just scrolling for something to watch and happened to see it on Apple TV. But I do really like Apple TV's content because, like, when I bought my new phone, like, a year ago, I got a free year of Apple TV. And then after that, I kept my subscription that I pay for now. And, you know, I wasn't expecting to do that, but I like their content. But I only see it because I open up the Apple TV app.
You never, like, see it on Twitter and then you're like, oh, I should go watch that. It's always, like, you have to actively seek it out, which is never a good sign in this world of content because everything
is apart from, like,
in your face
Ted
all the
Lasso
time.
And
right,
then I feel like Severance is kind of their big thing right now. But, like, they release a bunch of other content and you never see anything about it. I don't know.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. But we also technically did watch one movie both the same that we like is wasn't an Oscar movie or whatever, which was Wheel of Fortune and Fantasy, because I mean, because obviously, especially in January, Drive My Car was like really popular. And so this is Hamaguchi's like other really popular movie
from last year. They did
from
he did
last
two
year.
In 1 year.
Yeah, and they're long. Like they're both like he.
Yeah.
Wow. I don't. Some people are so productive, and I don't understand.
Yeah.
But yeah, though I had just seen Drive My Car, and then for some reason, like, I don't even think related, but you'd like rented this on the same day basically. And so I was like, oh, can I just have your account so I can watch it too? And that's how we both watched it. And we both didn't really like it. I mean, it's not really my kind of style. Like, both of this and Drive My Car just aren't really my kind of movie.
Yeah.
So it's not like I don't think it's well made. It's just, I don't even remember what, I had a very specific reason, like I pinpointed why I didn't like either of them.
Well, I'll tell you why I didn't like this one.
Sure, that sounds great.
Because I had been really looking forward to this one because a lot of people had rated it so highly and it looked like something I would be interested in. So I rented it once it was available to rent on Apple. And it's kind of like, I don't know if it would be like an anthology where it has three different stories of different people that aren't related, but kind of have, I guess, similar themes.
I think one of them did connect, though. Like, oh, maybe did it? One of them had a similar character, but it was kind of like not very in depth. Yeah.
Yeah. I just, there was really only like one of the stories that I liked in the anthology, and the other two, there's three short. I think there were three. If there was a fourth, I literally don't remember it. But yeah, there were two that I didn't like, and there was one that I did like. And so that was my main like issue with it, was I just didn't enjoy the content. But it was also just kind of slow for me and boring.
I think it's much more about the visual storytelling in both of his movies. I think Drive My Car is better than this movie. But I just feel like it is visual storytelling, but then he really does rely on a lot of dialogue, and I just don't like the way that his dialogue is written. That's really what it is. Mm-hmm. And so I find it to be very easy to just like zone out of his dialogue. Sure. Which, you know, that's how writing works. Sometimes you like the way some people write and you don't like the way other people write. But yeah, I probably won't watch this again, but I'll probably watch Drive My Car again. So I guess if I had to pick one, I would say watch that. Obviously, I mean, that was like the big awards one, but I'm glad I watched this just to say I did, I guess. Yeah, but now moving on to February, the second month of the year. This one we have a bit more new movies to talk about, I guess. But some of the older ones I watched just quickly. One I wanted to really mention was Girls at 12, which is a short film by Joyce Chopra, I think is how you pronounce her name. This was kind of weird because how I found her, because she directed Smooth Talk, I think is the name of the movie. Smooth Talk, the one with Laura Dern. I didn't really like that movie that much, but that's how like I know her name is from that movie. She also directed the Molly American Girl doll movie, which is kind of funny.
Oh, I love the American Girl movies.
We should do American Girl.
I would love that
episode. Summer of American Girl doll, maybe.
I'm sure I could find all my old, like, because I have an American Girl doll, and so I'm sure I could find like pictures of me with it, and I read all the books and watched all the movies.
But so Smooth Talk was the one she did, but then I watched a while ago her short film that she did with the director of Girlfriends. So, like, they both directed Joyce at 34, which is about her, Joyce, being pregnant and then having a baby and, like, how that affected her and her husband's professional lives, which is, an amazing short film. So I would definitely recommend Joyce at 34. But this was her other one that she did. She's done a couple, but this is her other big one, Girls at 12. And basically, it's like a New England middle school, I think, in 1975. And she just observes these 12-year-old girls. I think there's like four or five. And like interviews them about their lives and then interviews their parents and just like observes them in all their conversations. And it's really interesting because it is like a snapshot of 1975. But it's also interesting to see like a lot of how like similar everything is to now. And like how maybe the situational elements have changed, but a lot of the core issues haven't changed. This is a really good documentary. I think you would like both of those because they're very like observational, and she doesn't really like ask many questions. It's more like just showing you the interviews and showing you the footage and letting you draw your own conclusions. And it's kind of like interesting because none of these girls are famous. This is not a famous short film. So there's like nothing out about it online. And so there's like no way of even knowing what these girls' lives were like in the future when they grew up, you know, because this was 1975. So they're all like in their 50s now. So I don't know. I just really like movies or short film documentaries like this that are like snapshots that can also relate to the present day. I would highly recommend that. Both of those short films are on Criterion. And then the other small movie old movie I watched was The Sweet Hereafter. I watched this for a class. It's pretty good. I don't know if you would like it. I know it's on your watch list though. So
I don't even know what it is. Let me look at it.
It's about like a small town and there's like a school bus crashes and all these kids in the school bus die.
Like
a lawyer goes to the town and tries to like help them. It's pretty depressing, but I would recommend it, I guess. I think it's good for like February. So maybe wait till another February and watch it, because it's definitely like a winter movie. So I wouldn't watch it in the summer. So maybe wait a little bit and then watch it in the winter. New movies I watched. I don't know if I talked about the Get Back documentary because I finished it in 2022. I know it's 2021. This was good. I mean, I love the Beatles. I would watch anything. I just don't think that it is something that a non-Beatles fan would like. Like, you really have to like the Beatles to like this documentary. Like, for me, this is great. But logistically, or like realistically, I guess is a better way to put it, I think a better movie would have been if he had like cut this down to 2.5 hours. Mm-hmm. Like, I think you could easily cut this down because there is an element of it where it's like interesting to see everything that happens and to really like immerse yourself. But there is a lot of it that's just like, this is not necessary. Like, it's cool to see because I like it, but I don't think it is like technically moving this documentary forward or doing anything for it. It's just kind of cool to see Paul McCartney like be weird sometimes. But it's fun. You may be like, definitely cool to like just throw on and like you don't have to pay 100% attention because it's just like you're hanging out with them.
Yeah.
And then the other new movie I watched was Uncharted, which I've never played the video games, so I definitely didn't have as much of a problem with this as other people. And I know people were like, oh, the casting, oh my word, Tom Holland isn't a good casting choice. Well, like, he is because he's the only person that could get people to see this movie. Like,
yeah.
I don't think, like, you already have the video game. Just play the video game and I just don't think people understand how movies work or, like, popular movies work. Because I guarantee this wouldn't have made nearly as much money or done as well if Tom Holland wasn't in this movie.
Yeah.
And it's like, if you just see it as like just watching Tom Holland do some cool, fun stuff and make some jokes, then it's fun. The third act's not very good, but the second act is really good and gave me a lot of like what I kind of want from movies right now a little bit, which is like kind of like a National Treasure, like fun mid-budget movie where it's just like they're going on a treasure hunt and they're going to Europe and they're doing all this fun stuff. I don't know. It had an element of that. It could have been really good if they had really leaned into that, but at the end, it kind of turned more into like a big action movie, which isn't as fun for me. But, you know, it had a little bit of a treasure hunt element, which is good.
Let's see. I didn't put for February any like old movies because most of the stuff that I was watching was either like still 2021 movies before the Oscars or whatever. And like movies for the podcast. And then for new movies, I watched some very interesting things.
I know. This is an interesting set of three you have here.
Yeah. So I watched Tall Girl 2, which was terrible.
I can't believe you even watched this because you hated the first one.
Yeah. The first one was really bad. And the only reason I watched this was because I was like house sitting and I just needed something to throw on. And so I was like, oh, I'll just watch Tall Girl 2. And it was so bad. It was way worse than the first one.
Which is hard
to do. Yeah, it just, everything about it was just really bad. Don't watch it or the first one.
It's rough.
And then I watched The Tinder Swindler, which was a pretty popular documentary for a little bit. It was also pretty bad. It was just kind of boring, and the content matter was just like, why are we, I don't know, making a movie about this?
Well, now they're making a real movie about that.
Yeah,
so,
which
not just
is just so, I just have a problem with, like, now this guy, even though people hate him, is like, has even more of a platform. And so that is just the kind of things that I'm like, if the person is still alive and they're trying to be famous and be a con artist, then, like, you're only giving them more of a platform by making a documentary about them. And so that kind of just, like, as, like, I don't know. There's just a lot of things.
The same thing with the Tiger King. Like, that was, like, how I felt about that one, too.
Yes.
Where it's, like, this isn't a terrible person that obviously this is, like, exactly what he wants. So why are we giving this to him? But because people like his content and people like the content.
Yeah, and people
so
like that kind of content. I don't know. I wouldn't recommend it. And then I watched the Wedding Veil trilogy on the Hallmark Channel, which was a big thing. So they had three of their most popular, like, leading ladies be in these. And they played, like, best friends from college. And each movie, like, they were all in each movie, but each movie focused on a different person. And so basically what it is it's kind of like a Sisterhood of the Traveling Pants thing, where they're taking this trip together, and they go in this store and find this, like, wedding veil, and none of them, like, one of them may have been with someone or something like that, but they, it basically was like, the veil is magic, and if you have the veil and you meet someone, like, then they're the person you're gonna be with, or something along those lines.
Gotta be careful who you run into.
The veil
then
brings
when
you,
got that veil.
Like, someone, basically. Like,
okay.
Connects you
gotcha.
With someone. And so it goes through each of them where, like, the one meets someone and falls in love with them on this thing, and then they're also trying to figure out, like, where the veil came from originally, and that leads them to the family and all this stuff. So it kind of carries through each of the movies. Some of them were better than others, but it was still kind of, like, fun, I guess. Like,
that's a fun idea. Like, definitely more than, like, most Hallmark movies try to do. It sounded like they had an idea, actually.
Yeah, and all the, like, women in it, like I said, were kind of the more, like, popular women. So, like, Lacey Chabert, who's, like, one of the biggest Hallmark leading ladies.
Right, yeah.
And then Autumn Reeser, who's one of my favorites. And then Allison Sweeney. So it was, like, they were pretty big, and that, I feel like, made them a little more successful, too. But I mean, they're not great, but they're good, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I have a couple questions. So, is it all take place on this one trip?
No.
Oh, okay.
So, they, like, go home, and then once one was, like, something, it like, also spanned. Like, one was already got married and wore the veil at the wedding and then passed it off to the next person. And then one took it because they were, like, I don't remember if it needed, like, mending, or they were just trying to figure out where it came from. So she took it on a trip to, like, I think it was Italy, to, like, find some of the information, the origins of the veil. And that's where she met the person. And then it turned out, like, spoiler, it was in that guy's, like, family. Like, it was his great grandma's veil or something. So it was, like, I don't know. It, like, traveled with it. And then like, when they would go to the wedding, the guy from the previous movie was, like, at the wedding or something like that. So it was funny.
And then was the ending, but so by the end, they all got married, I'm assuming.
Yes.
All three of them. Okay. And then was the end, like, just what did they do with the veil at the end?
I think they gave it back to the family, or it was put in a museum, something like that.
They should have done, like, a Jumanji thing where they throw it in the river and then they show, like, it on the beach somewhere, and then they have the drums and then it cuts to black. I don't know. Then, like, maybe the, and then at the end, it's like the wedding veil will return.
That's funny.
Oh, man. Well, what a trilogy. Look at that.
Yeah.
Yeah, like I said, it sounds like maybe, like, out of all the Hallmark movies I've heard of and seen, like, it actually had, like,
yeah,
an interesting idea.
It was definitely
that maybe, like,
creative.
Someone definitely came up with, not a computer. Like, that definitely sounds like someone came up with that. So that's always good. Cool. So now moving on to March. These 2 months are definitely a lot more packed for us. You know, well, because also this is when we stopped watching as many Oscar movies, you know, and we got into, like,
other
the
movies,
year.
Yeah.
Which, you know, is always, like, as much as I love watching all the Oscar movies, like, I mean, my OCD likes it at least. It's such a relief, you know, when you finish it and, like, it's like this whole new world of movies opens up that you never even knew. I guess the first one I'll mention is Coming to America, which I did watch for the Oscars so I could watch the sequel. So I'm just, this is just the original, which is not from 2021. The sequel's not very good, but this movie was pretty, it's good. I mean, it's like a classic comedy from this era. It definitely, there's some things it hasn't aged great in, but then there's some things that it has. So it's like, there's not many comedies from this era that are like gonna completely age perfectly. And I think there's some funny jokes in this. It's a good runtime. Yeah, I mean, people like it for a reason. I'm also going to mention Zombies 1 and 2, which are classics. No, I mean, I just watched these two with my sisters. That's why I watched them. I didn't watch them alone. I'm not that weird, but they were not great. I would say the first one was definitely better. The first one, I think, was like not bad. The second one was completely terrible. So if you're gonna watch these, just watch the first one, because the first one tries to do some cool social commentary stuff, and then at the end it turns into complete like centrist like propaganda, like just randomly. Like it's like it was pretty progressive and like in depth in its commentary until then, and then all of a sudden at the end they were like, no, we're not gonna go there anymore. We're gonna, like, the establishment is great, guys. Don't worry. But up until then, it was fine. The music was definitely better in this first one. And then the second one is just completely terrible. They do try to do, again, like, some social commentary, but it's really, like, it gets really in the weeds. Because basically, it's, so the first one, it's, you have the humans and the zombies, right? I think the zombies were, like, created in, like, this lab explosion or something. I don't quite remember. But then the humans and the zombies are segregated, right? And so the zombies have, like, these, like, Z bands, which make them not want to eat people, basically. But they're still segregated. But then there's, like, this program where zombies are, like trying to be initiated into the school, the high school where all the humans go. And there's still segregation there, though. So, like, they get put in the basement, basically. And they, like, have all their classes in the basement. But then you have the one guy, the main zombie, who becomes a football star, but only because he, like, learned how, or, like, his friend helped him hack his Z-band. So, like, he can, like, turn it off when he's playing football, and then he's, like, really strong. And so that's, like, that was where it was cool, because it's, like, talking about how, I mean, all of, like, the activism was basically on his shoulders, you know? He's doing this, like, for zombies everywhere, but then you saw the toll it was taking on him, and also like how they only liked zombies when he was helping them win the games. So that was pretty cool. I was like, this is working out pretty well for I like this idea. I don't really remember how it ended. Again, it was like, I think like his friend was like definitely coded as like the teenage like activist that was like down with the establishment. But then at the end, they were like, you don't want to take down everything. And she was like, yeah, I guess you're right. And I was like, okay, well, that wasn't great. And then the second one was, then they found out there was like these Wolverines also, like, which I think were supposed to be like native, like, coded as like a Native American like subtext, because they like lived there first and then the humans took over and like shoved them into hiding. That one just did not go, that was not great, because yeah, it was pretty bad the way they handled that. I'm not gonna get into the whole story because it was, no, but the first one was fine. Two things I also watched for a class. I watched Requiem for a Dream, which, you know, was good. I don't think that many people don't think that movie's good. I, again, would not recommend that you watch this one. Definitely not. I don't think you would like this at all. But It was good. And then I rewatched A Ghost Story mostly because I know we have some friends that really like this movie. and I was really trying this time to really focus. I didn't watch it, and I only watched it in one sitting, you know. I was really focused on it. And I still didn't really click for me, unfortunately. Mm. I don't know quite what it is. I think, I don't know. It just doesn't work for me as much. And I think the stuff, the message that is there, I understand like right away, basically. And it just feels like, why do we need a whole movie to get this? We're like, sure. This is it's not a very deep idea. I don't know. That's what I feel like personally. But there was stuff I liked a little bit more this time. Like some of the technical choices I thought were really good. And so I was able to appreciate it a little bit more, but I just don't think it's for me. The new movies I watched After Yang on Showtime, which was, it was okay. I like Columbus, so I was like excited to watch this. I think that it's definitely in the same way as Columbus, like pretty slow, but I'm not sure. There was just some story stuff where it just didn't all click for me, and it felt it was kind of dragging a little bit, even though it was pretty short. Like, it was like the same thing over and over, even like the same locations over and over, where you just saw him in the car, and then you saw him, and then he went somewhere, and then he drove in the car again. So I would like to maybe watch it again, because I do know a lot of people like this movie, and I did just listen to like the podcast, the A24 thing he was on, and that was a really interesting conversation. And like hearing him talk about it, and also like how his creative process made me want to watch it again, just to kind of like get another feel for it. So maybe I'll watch it again. And I know a lot of people like it, so I would recommend watching it. Another A24 movie was X, which was really big for like a week or two on Letterboxd. I like this movie a lot. I know that there's some people that like really don't like it, and there's some people that really love it. I think it's like in the middle, where it's like a pretty good movie. It definitely could have been better, but I've seen way worse in this genre of like the slasher exploitative genre. And it does have some interesting commentary on like how like the evangelical view of sexuality, because it's like the white older evangelical, and like how their insecurities about their own sexuality is making them push that onto the younger generations and like indoctrinating them with it. And there's a really great twist at the end that like for me really brought that all into focus, where like at the end of it I was like, this was pretty good, it was fun, there were some cool kills, but for some reason like the twist at the end I thought did a really good job of bringing all those themes into focus and like really like clicked. So I would like recommend this movie. I think it's really good. I know you don't love slashers, and this is a pretty gory one. But maybe if you like just looked away at some of the parts, because I do think like there is some really cool subtext that they work here. And Kid Cudi is like a great actor in this movie. He was really good. Because he was in Don't Look Up, and he didn't really have a huge role in that, but this movie, he was really good. So I'd recommend this, and I'm excited for the prequel, because they're doing like a prequel, I think. So that would be cool. And then I also wanted to mention Genius, just because, you know, it was big. This is not really amazing movie, or it's a miniseries. This is the Kanye West miniseries. I think, personally, this should have, because it's three episodes, this should have either been just a documentary about the making of The College Dropout, because that just is nothing about anything that's happened in the last 10 years. So it should have been just that. Or it should have not come out, and they should have waited until there was more stuff. I don't know, until his career was more complete, I guess. Because it tried to do like this in-between thing where it tried to have a conclusion, because it ends in the present day. It ended like, I think it would be in the second Donda like listening party, where like he rises to the sky, that one. And they try to like make some kind of conclusion, but it doesn't really work. Especially because I watched it when all of like the latest Kanye like drama was going on. And so it just was really weird, because it was like they're trying to make this conclusion, but there's something going on like right now that is like contradicting this conclusion that they're making, or this trying to feeling of finality that they're trying to give this his story. And I think it doesn't work And I would have rather it just been about the College Dropout album making, because that is a great album. That's my favorite one. And if they had just done that, that would have been good. But I think the third episode is a real doesn't end the series well. But anyway, what about you? What are some stuff that you watched?
I watched a decent amount in March, maybe, like, not as much as I usually do. And a lot of it was stuff for the podcast, or some rewatches, like, of some of my favorite movies, Coraline, Up, stuff like that. 13 Going on 30.
Of course.
And then some screeners for the Lost Weekend Film Festival.
So fancy.
So fancy.
Some screeners.
Which I'll talk about one of them here. But for an old movie, I didn't like this movie, but I felt like I could talk about it. I watched Fallen Angels, which is a Wong Kar... How do you say his name?
Wong Kar-wai movie. Yeah.
Yeah, Wong Kar-wai movie. Yeah, I haven't seen any of his movies until now. This was the first one I watched of his. I didn't like it. I think he's just not my style. I definitely, like, get why people like it. I think it's just not for me. Like, I think it's good for what it is, but it's just, I didn't connect with the style of filmmaking.
Yeah.
And then more TV to talk about, because I mostly, like, I don't know, sometimes I just watch more TV in a month than I do movies. So I watched, wow, I have a lot of Apple TV stuff to talk about. I watched Apple TV,
Apple, not a sponsor.
original Ghost Rider, which is a kid's show. And it's a remake of a show, I think it was from the 90s, that followed the same premise. And it's basically about these kids. One of them lives in his grandpa's, like, they live above his grandfather's book shop, and kind of meets these other kids. He's new to the school. And it's like two to three episodes cover one specific story. And basically there's a ghost that is in the bookshop who is telling them things, and these characters get released from a book and then kind of are in the real world, and they have to, like, figure out what they need to solve or help the person with to get them back into the book. And it was really interesting because it wasn't amazing. I thought it was good, but I kind of just would put it on when I was doing other stuff. But I watched both seasons, and I'll probably watch I think there's a season 3 coming out, eventually, that I'll probably watch too. But I just really appreciated it because I think it will get kids to read more who watch it. Because the kids, since each one focuses on a different book, the kids in the story read the book, and then they released, like, books that were branded with the show. So it was like a kid could go buy the Ghost Rider edition of a specific book. So I just thought that was cool. It was just a fun little show.
Yeah.
And then for new ones that I watched Paramount Plus's 3 Months, which I was looking forward to, because Troye Sivan is in it, and it looked like it could be interesting. It's kind of like a queer story where one of the kids, it's like the summer right after he finished high school. He was exposed to HIV, and so he is getting tested for HIV, basically, at that time. And then he meets someone in, like, a support group who also is, like, waiting for their results for HIV. And so it's kind of like a love story. And I was like, oh, like, fun premise.
This kind of sounds good. Like, it sounds like a good premise.
Yeah, it was really bad. I gave it 1.5 stars.
It.
Other people did give it more stars than me. But I think I just, like,
man,
I really didn't like the way the story was told. I thought some of the dialogue was very, like, cheesy and not well written. And the acting was also not great. So all around, just a major L and disappointment.
That sucks. That sounds like a great, what a waste.
I know. Man. And then I watched Hit the Road, which was a screener that originally played at... It played at AFI, and I think it played at other ones as well. So this one, it's directed by, what is the guy's name? I mean, I know he said that he doesn't always like to be related to his dad. What is his, Jafar Panahi, who did... this is not a film. Like, he was banned from making...
Oh, so it's his...
It's his son.
Yeah, so this is his son? Uh-huh. Wow. That's wild.
And there's some really interesting interviews that I read of the son and talking about how this movie and making it, because this is his first feature. Worked on sets and stuff before. But how this, like, helped reconnect him with his dad and rekindle a relationship with him to, like... ask him for advice and stuff. Just some really interesting stuff. But basically, this is a road trip movie. And the oldest son is trying to escape Iran for undisclosed reasons. But in the interviews with him, it just sounds like trying to escape the regime and, like, the rules and
right.
the way that they treat men and require them to do certain things and... join the military there and all that. And so he's traveling with his dad, his mom, and his younger brother, who's like six. And the younger brother is like probably one of the best child actors I've ever seen. He totally stole the whole movie. He was so good.
Wow.
And it was a really, I would recommend it to people who, you know, can get a chance to watch it. I hope that it streams one day soon, because it is definitely worth watching. It has an amazing needle drop in it. Actually, it has two great needle drops at the end of the movie, but one specifically is like
that.
Really good. And yeah, the kid is just like literally incredible.
Yeah, I'm excited to. I didn't know that was his dad. That's really cool. I was planning on watching it anyway because I know that you really liked it.
Yeah, so, and for like a debut, it's very impressive. And I think you would like it because there's a lot of like just talking scenes.
Love talking.
Between the dad and the oldest son, like connecting, which kind of almost feels reminiscent, like reading the interviews. Mm. Of, like, him kind of writing about his relationship with his dad and, like, trying to reconnect with him in the dialogue he wrote. And then there's also a really cool scene. The guy's really into films. I don't want to spoil it, but there's just a really cool scene that parallels a scene from, like, the beginning of the movie when he was talking to his mom about a movie that he loved. And it kind of came back in the end. When the dad is, like, processing his son leaving and stuff with the younger son. Mm-hmm. It's really good. I definitely recommend people who can get their hands on it to watch it. It's also, like, very nuanced because you're not really sure what the exact reason is that he's leaving. And you can kind of, like, you know, infer certain things. But I just the storytelling itself is really good. Then I watched another TV show. On Apple TV, The After Party, which is basically a murder mystery show, and each of the episodes focuses on one of the different characters telling their perspective of the murder, and the main police officer in charge or detective in charge of the case is Tiffany Haddish, and this is the first role that I've ever watched her in that I was like, oh, I like her, I get it now, because like she's someone that has always confused me in the stuff she's been in because I just don't think she's a great actress or has gelled with the roles that I've seen her in.
She's pretty good in The Card Counter. Did you watch
The Card
Counter?
I did not.
Oh, she's pretty good in that.
But
anyway, sorry.
Seeing this, I was like, okay, this role is perfect for her. And it was the first time I had watched her in something that I was really impressed with what she did. And I think a lot of this show was like improv. Because they had a lot of great comedian actors in it. I would definitely recommend this to everyone because it was really fun.
This whole episode is just an ad for Apple TV, I think.
Yeah.
this is, I think, just an advertisement.
It was short, so it was easy to get through. And if you like kind of that, I really think Knives Out like revitalized the comedy murder mystery.
Hmm.
And this is right up that alley. So if you like Only Murders, if you like Knives Out, stuff like that, I think this is the perfect watch. Perfect. And then I don't know if you want to talk about these now.
Yeah, we can kind of like, I mean, these are both similar because they're like kind of like revitalizing mid 2000s kind of styles. And
yeah, because you watched these in April. Yeah. So the first one is The Lost City, which was the Sandra Bullock, Channing Tatum movie, adventure movie. And this was funny because like I was kind of excited for this one, because I've talked about that the early 2000s, kind of mid 2000s, 10s, like how I feel like that renaissance is coming back post COVID. People returning to these like very silly studio comedies, which I'm totally here for. I thought that this was good. I didn't like love it, but I thought for what it was, it did a good job. I laughed a lot in the theater. I thought it was funny. I thought Channing Tatum did a good job, and I don't normally like him in stuff.
He was really good in this movie. Like, if he wasn't in this movie, it would have been a lot worse,
in my opinion. And so, I don't know. What did you think of this one?
I mean, it basically was, like, exactly what I wanted from it, you know? Like, I wasn't expecting it to be amazing, but, like, I got what I came for. This was kind of what I was hoping Marry Me would be like, and it just wasn't.
Yeah.
A lot of funny stuff. I think the biggest issue was the chemistry between them was, like, good, but it wasn't great. And, like, I got more of, like, a friend energy between them than a romantic energy.
Sure.
So I think if I had liked their wanted them to get together more, I would have liked it even more, but it was still like really funny. And he was really funny, like I said, and there is an incredible, like 5 minutes with Brad Pitt, which the best thing in the movie maybe I've seen this year. Like it was like shockingly like both well made and also just so funny.
It was so funny. Yeah, I think Brad Pitt was great in this because usually he's like, I don't know, more leading. And he was really only in this for like a very short amount of time. And he was so funny in what he was in. And I thought Daniel Radcliffe was great too.
I didn't even know he was in this.
He played this like very, I don't know, silly villain. Very scatterbrained, like the classic, kind of awful villain who's dumb and like crazy. And I thought that he did that perfectly and is just a great actor. And so all around, I think this was definitely a fun watch. I dragged my mom to go see it. She like didn't really want to go see it. And I was like, I'm buying you a ticket, so.
Did she like it?
I think she did. I don't think she liked it as much as I did, but I don't think she disliked it.
Yeah, I think it's hard. This is a hard movie to, like, not have any enjoyment in, you know? I think it's pretty crowd-pleasing,
and
at
like,
least on a certain level. That
opening scene where they're doing the book tour launch and he comes out, that scene is so funny. And I just was like laughing the whole time. I'm still laughing.
He's
just thinking about it.
He is really funny. Like this is a perfect role for him. I'm really glad they got him. The other one we have here is The Adam Project, which was Netflix, right?
Yeah. Netflix original.
And we both like this a little bit more than I think other people did, which isn't like, I mean, not everyone didn't like it. So it's like, we kind of liked it.
Yeah, I think the thing with this one is you have to go into it knowing what it is. Right. If you go into it expecting some kind of masterpiece, it's probably not going to hold up to your expectations. But I think if you go into it being like, okay, Ryan Reynolds is in it, so it's going to be kind of like a dorky comedy and like
a Ryan Reynolds movie.
It's a Netflix original, like one of their big blockbusters. So you can kind of expect what kind of action you're going to get based on stuff like I would say maybe The Old Guard or some of those other big ones they kind of do. And I liked it. Sometimes I know Ryan Reynolds can be annoying. I thought this was perfect for him. I thought Walker Scobell was great. I think that he's basically a mini Ryan Reynolds. And so I think that was like a great casting too. And the two of them just had like really good chemistry. So I thought that because the whole movie was about the two of them, that it worked.
Yeah, definitely. I think he was the kid definitely like helped, because he had a similar style of comedy to Ryan Reynolds, but it's like everyone has their own like individual. So I think a lot of Ryan Reynolds movies really rely solely on him. And so I think having the kid as well as a big character helped give him something to bounce off of more. Yeah, and I think it's like Sean Levy, you know, he did Free Guy, he did this, he's really trying to bring back these, like,
Night at the Museum, like,
I'm saying
that's the style that he's bringing back, is like
Cheaper by the Dozen.
He's trying to bring back
that comedy style.
He's in the right time, because like we said, revitalizing that kind of genre. I mean, he killed it when he did that genre in the 2000s, and so now it's his time to make a comeback.
It is his time. I'm not sure if he was the right choice for Deadpool 3. I mean, we did talk about Deadpool. Like, that's just a very weird choice, but I don't know. I guess we'll see. We will see. Yeah, because he didn't make a movie since 2014 until Free Guy. So, like, he took a lot of time off. I think he did like the Stranger Things producing, right? Like, he did more of that stuff, and then he's now, I guess, he's trying to bring back the mid-2000s comedy movie, which is cool. All right, we got to get moving here. This is April. We're in the last month. I have a lot I put down here, but I'm not going to talk about them for very long, just so we can get through it. So one I just wanted to quickly mention was Diagoro versus Goliath, just because it was funny. I watched this. I think I've mentioned like the bad movie night group thing I do. This is one we watched for that. I picked this one because I'm just like so cool and I have like the greatest taste. But this is like, what is it from? 1972 Japanese kaiju movie. Very like, I think it was supposed to be a Godzilla movie, but like it wasn't good enough, so they kind of like made a new character. And it's just like fun. It was just really funny. Especially like the monster fights were very cool. I think it's on YouTube. So if you just want to throw something on that's like mindless, I would throw this on. I watched Silence, finally, the Martin Scorsese movie. This was pretty, really good. Like, I wasn't even expecting this to be amazing. Obviously, it's going to be like some level of decent because of the cast and Martin Scorsese. Like, I knew it was going to be good, but it was like definitely one of my favorite Scorsese movies I've seen. And I really liked the depiction of religion. It had he always approaches like religious themes with such interesting angles, and like he has such an interesting view of that, from Mean Streets then to like The Last Temptation of Christ to this. Like, there's a through line there, but you can also see how his opinions and his like viewpoints have shifted over the years. Even in The Irishman, I think, has elements of that. And so this was really good. Andrew Garfield was incredible, as always. I watched Miss Stevens just because like it was short and I knew it was going to be light. And so I watched it. And, you know, it's not great. I think the premise is better. It's basically like this teacher, this English teacher, it's like 29, takes three students on like a trip to like they're doing like a competition of like they have to read like a monologue kind of thing. And like whoever, you know, it's like a drama club thing. And she takes them three. And it's mostly about Timothée Chalamet's character and his like attachment to her. And his crush on her, I guess. So it had a better premise, I think, than the execution. But it was still fun. Timothée Chalamet is always good. Like, he was definitely the highlight of the movie. And I think it was on Prime or something. It was streaming a lot of places. So if you want to watch something kind of light, this is a good one. I watched Moonlight twice because I was doing a presentation on it, so I rewatched it twice. And I hadn't seen it since like 4 years ago, so I'd been wanting to rewatch it for a while. And it's still good, you know? I mean, there's not much else to say. I think I had it at 4.5 out of 5, and it stayed at that both times. I think that's kind of where I don't think it's ever going to be a 5-star for me. There's a couple of things, mostly in like the acting, I think. In some of the characters, or maybe the direction of the acting or the dialogue. I don't know. I'm still trying to figure out exactly, but there's something about that kind of holds me back from it being a 5-star, especially in the first two acts, but it's still obviously an amazing movie. I watched Good Morning, because I hadn't seen any Ozu movies, and so I'll probably watch more of them maybe this summer. But this was, I thought, a good first one because it was short too, and this one is really good. I really liked it. It was really cute, and it was really great the way it was shot and how it shot it in that village, and like the way that it framed the rooms and framed like doors through doors to the other house. Hard to explain, but like he really found a really great way to shoot the location that they had, which I think really elevated it past being just like a fun, like light comedy. And the little kid is so cute in this movie. He's like, it was like insane. And I love their little, his little sweater that he was wearing. Oh my gosh. Aww, okay.
Wow.
Yeah. I would definitely, I think you would really like this movie.
Yeah. It's been on my list forever.
Definitely feels like something you would like. The two new movies I watched that I'll talk about, besides the ones that we both watched, The Northman, which was good. It's definitely my least favorite Robert Eggers movie, but like I really like all three of them, so it's not really like I didn't like it. It was both more accessible and less accessible than I thought it would be. There's like a lot of parts that are really in depth on the lore, kind of like Lighthouse, I guess, in some of those scenes. But then there's a lot of stuff that's like really like just like act straight up action movie. And I think he does a pretty good job of blending them, but it's also obvious, a lot of people have been saying, where it's like you can see where they had to cut stuff because of the studio. And I don't know if it would have been so much different if there wasn't studio involvement, but I think it definitely would have been a little bit more, feel a little bit more cohesive, I guess, between those two things, where it's like the more action elements and then the more mystical, like basically what he likes. He did say in an interview that he would have put it all in like the old dialect if it wasn't a studio movie, which I don't know if that would have been great, but it would have maybe made it more cohesive. I don't know.
Sure.
But it's still good. And I think it's kind of sad that it's not going to make its money back because it's like $90 million. There's no way it's going to make $90 million at this point.
Yeah.
And then I also saw Everything Everywhere All at Once, which was like the big movie of the month. Very good. Yeah, it's like, I'm really glad this movie is doing really well and that everyone's loving it. I didn't love it as much as everyone did. I gave it like a 4 out of 5. I think it's just really good. I still think that there's a better movie that they could make because they did Swiss Army Man and they did this. This is better than Swiss Army Man, but there's still elements that I'm like, I think they have like an even better movie in them, which I know some people might think is like crazy to say because some people think this is like a masterpiece, but there's still elements that I think they could improve on to like really sell their thing, because they can lean too heavily a little bit sometimes into like the absurdist stuff or what they're, I don't know, it just seems like they're searching for something that they're close to finding, and they're closer with this movie, but I think they still haven't totally reached that idea yet. And so I'm excited to see what else they keep making as their like visions become even more clear, because they still seem like they're like really like they're going to be keeping making stuff. Then obviously after this, they're probably going to get an even bigger budget in the next movie. So I'm excited to see where their career goes.
So for some old movies that I watch, I watched A Day in the Country, which is a Jean Renoir movie. I don't know how to say his name. But
sounds right.
Yeah. This is actually an unfinished film. I am not really sure. There's like all kinds of lore about it, about why it was unfinished, and I guess he was shooting other things or something. So it was only about 40 minutes. But the 40, I mean, it can still tell a story through the 40 minutes. So it's not like it just cuts off or anything. It's cut together in a way that still works. But it was good. I think specifically one thing I really liked about it's black and white, because it was made in the 40s. Was just the way some of the stuff was shot. There was this one shot specifically where this girl is swinging on like a swing, and she's like standing as she's swinging on the swing, and the shot was like moving with her, which is something you'd see now, but I felt like in the 40s, it's very interesting to me that like this shot exists and that it's like something they did then where it's like moving with her and stuff. So that stood out to me. And the costuming is great, obviously. And just like, it's a very summery type, feel. So if someone's looking for something nice, that's good, in the summertime, that's short, I would recommend watching that. It was on HBO. And it's also on Criterion. Then I watched Practical Magic because I, for some reason, my brain is like in a October through December, like I just cannot switch it off. I don't know what it is specifically. I don't know if it's like the weather has been or just that like I'm feeling nostalgic for Halloween and Christmas and all that. But Practical Magic, a lot of people are familiar with this one and probably have already seen it. It's just like a very witchy, it's got Sandra Bullock and Nicole Kidman. It's like a little love story. It's cute. All that. Great feel-good movie. So I watched that to kind of, I don't know. I've been trying not to give in.
Yeah, that just maybe seems like maybe wouldn't be the best choice there.
I just needed it. And so I watched it and it was great. And then I watched, just recently, you recommended me to watch Election. So I watched that one and I really liked it. If you're familiar with this movie, there's a lot of good things about it. Great storytelling, great characters. It's funny. I didn't like the last like 10 minutes, like the ending and conclusion, I thought kind of just threw off the whole film. And I gave it 4 stars. I might have rated it higher if it had ended about 10 minutes sooner.
I agree. Yeah,
definitely. But it was still good. And then for some new stuff that I watched, I've got a few fun things to talk about here. I watched Better Nate Than Ever, which, if you know me, I've been talking about this one for a while since it was announced. I think I probably talked about it in my anticipated movies of 2022.
Yeah, you did.
So this is based on a book series. There's 2 books written by Tim Federle, who directed this and also directed the High School Musical series. And the books are great. Basically, he wants to be a Broadway star, and he sneaks off to New York and tries to audition. In the book, he's auditioning for E.T., the musical. And so he wants to audition for Elliot and like...
Is there an E.T. musical?
No. And that was kind of like, it's supposed to be like a new musical is the whole thing. So they're doing an open casting call for a new musical. In the movie, they did Lilo and Stitch, the musical, because Disney. It's Disney that owns it. So it's an easier, you know, property thing. And it's a Disney Plus show. I think it still worked because it holds exactly the same... Like, I mean, I don't really want to spoil it in the book because I don't think anyone is trying to read this book who listens to our podcast. Basically, he's auditioning for Elliot. And then because of how like weird and quirky and silly this kid is, they cast him as an understudy for E.T. And then for this, he's auditioning for Stitch. So it has the similar like... kind of weird creature type thing, but he's specifically auditioning for Stitch in this one. So I think it still works. It's very cute. It's very fun. I watched this with my mom and she thought it was fun too. I think this is perfect for like, you know, 9 to 14-year-olds to watch. I thought the movie was great. It had some really great moments in it. Joshua Bassett plays the older brother, which is so weird because the older brother is like a track star. And I thought this when he was cast as this role is I'm like, he's very much not a jock. And so it was weird to me that he was cast because he doesn't come across as a jock. And then when in the movie, it felt the same way to me. And I was like, I cannot believe that he is a jock. Like, it's just not.
It's probably because, like, they were on the High School Musical set and he was like, I'm working on this movie.
And it seems like something that the story itself is probably something that's important to Joshua Bassett because the, you know, lead is a queer character who feels like he doesn't fit in because he likes Broadway musicals. And that's something that Josh has expressed about his own life. So I can tell, like, why he wanted to be a part of this project.
Right, yeah.
And he did a great job with his role as well. All around, it was good. I think my biggest complaint with it is that it wasn't explicitly gay enough. In the same way the book was, which I'm sure Tim, who's gay himself, did the best he could with what Disney allowed him to do, I would guess. But it is a very, like, palatable queer story. Like, he never actually says, I'm gay. It's very much like, I don't like you that way to his friend who's a girl who likes him. Or, like, I think you can love who you love. And, like, just kind of stuff like that, that is, like, queer-coded language, but isn't, I don't know, forward. I wish it had been more forward. If they make a sequel, they're, like, based on the book, there is a relationship in that one. So I don't know if they're going to do that with the sequel. I'm sure they're doing a sequel. But yeah, those are my thoughts. I still really liked it. Then I watched another screener, The Last Film Show, that I don't know what festival it was at again. But it was basically about a kid who discovers cinema and wants to, like, be involved in cinema, and he goes and helps secretly skip school and helps the guy in the projection room at the local theater. And it's just a very special, like, if you're into cinema, this is a very special film, the way it showcases, like, the love of cinema through the fresh eyes of a young kid who wants to be a filmmaker when he grows up because of his experience at the movie theater. So I would recommend people get that on their watch list for when it eventually, like, gets a more broad distribution. Then I watched The White Hot, The Rise and Fall of Abercrombie and Fitch on Netflix, which was a documentary. This was interesting. There were a lot of things that I didn't know. I knew some of the, like, drama that surrounded Abercrombie and Fitch, specifically to, like, some of the stuff that happened with their fat phobia and stuff like that, and just the way that they were not having size inclusive and basically said that they only wanted skinny people to wear their clothes, stuff like that. So it talks about a lot of that. It talks a lot about the racism in their company when it started and how they only wanted white models and white people working in the front of the store and pushing the people of color to the back of the store, stuff like that. So it is really interesting. I think, though, it follows a very basic structure of a documentary. So the storytelling style isn't as interesting as some of the content matter, but it was still decent. Then I watched Snoopy Presents It's the Small Things, Charlie Brown, which was so sweet.
Another Apple TV.
Oh my gosh, yeah. Apple TV original, because they are the ones that do the Snoopy Presents series. So they did the Auld Lang Syne in whatever that one was, the New Year special in the winter. And then they had this one, which was an Earth Day special. And I think they're probably doing a couple more this year for different holidays. This one was great. And one thing I really appreciate about these specials that they're doing now is they're focusing on, each one focuses on a different character. So, like, Lucy was kind of the main character of the New Year's one, and it was Charlie Brown's relationship with Lucy, and then in this one, it's his sister, and so it focuses on his relationship with his sister, and I'm assuming they'll do one maybe for, like, Linus or something like that in the future, but it's so cute because she is wanting to protect this flower that's on the baseball field, and he wants to play this big baseball game, and it's, like, the big game of the year. He wants to win the pennant, and so it's kind of his trying to understand her perspective of, like, protecting the flower, and it kind of goes through, like, her emotional journey and her wanting to protect the life of the flower and him trying to, like, understand because he's like, I just want to play baseball. It was beautiful. The animation, it was so good. It, like, the backgrounds were so pretty, and it felt very, like, they do have a new style compared to the old ones, but I feel like this is the best that the new style has looked, in my opinion, from the other new ones that I've watched, and it's so sweet. I teared up. It's so cute. They have this, like, very, like, they have this musical number which is not something that I was expecting, but it like worked. And then I was like, oh man, I wish I could like listen to the song. But apparently the song is only exclusive to Apple. So you can only listen to it on Apple Music, which is very lame in my opinion. You can't like listen to it on Spotify, because I guess it's Apple original, blah, 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 whatever. Yeah, but I would definitely recommend that for anyone who's looking for like a spring summer watch that's short. And then on Netflix, I watched the new Heartstopper show, which a lot of people have talked about, and it was really good. It's based on the graphic novel series of Heartstopper, which I've read, and it was very cute. So if you're looking for like a positive queer story that's just like very cute, you should watch it.
And now we have three more things to talk about that we both watched because we watched them together. Wow. So for old, we watched Fired Up because I think Dan recommended this in one of the questions of the week.
Yeah, I looked back. It was the high school movie one. So after we watched 21 Jump Street and asked people for their favorite high school movies or like whatever, then this was the one that he recommended.
Right. So this is from 2009. It's a comedy, high school comedy, where this is just reading from the like a Google description. Two male high school football stars enroll in cheerleading camp so they can practice their playbook on pretty girls. Well, that's a pretty good way to, that's pretty clever.
Yeah, so they basically go to the cheerleading camp or join the cheerleading squad to like get with girls, but then end up enjoying cheerleading and it's a whole thing.
Right, of course. Yeah, which it was great. I loved it. I think it's like exactly what I want from this kind of movie, you know?
Yeah, it was super funny. Like, there were so many lines that we laughed at, and it was like, oh, that was a really clever, like, line. And the two guy friends had a great relationship. They were really funny to watch, just be, like, BFFs. And, yeah, it was a great movie. There was some stuff in it that, like, now definitely would not be in it. But I think overall it was really good. I would recommend it.
Yeah, for 2009, I think I was like surprised at how not problematic it was, you know, because like obviously there's going to be things in there that are like not the greatest representation of that, but it was definitely better than I thought it would be in that area.
Yeah, there was really only one storyline that was very minor that was like a little bit problematic and uncomfortable. But, like, apart from that one, like, random side plot, everything else I thought was generally, like, still held up pretty well.
Yeah, and there's pretty positive portrayals of gay relationships or, like, gay people, I think.
Yeah.
And then there was less positive portrayal of lesbian relationships, but it was still there. So I think they were both there. And for 2009, like I said, I think it was definitely, like, better than I think it could have been.
Yeah, totally agree.
So I would recommend this one. It's like similar to like a Bring It On kind of vibe, you know, like that cheerleading movie. They watch Bring It On in this movie. So it's like definitely trying to pull from that. And then the new movies we watched, one was The Unbearable Weight of Massive Talent, which we are both looking forward to. I mean, I think a lot of people have it almost because like, it's hard to believe that this movie is, like, actually a real movie.
And was, like, in the theater circuit as well.
Right. And even after watching it, I still have a hard time believing it's a real movie. Because it kind of, like, sometimes it feels like it's fake.
Yeah.
For better or worse. Like, and I think it's better when it's leading into the buddy comedy. Because Pedro Pascal's in this movie. And I think him and Nicolas Cage have really good chemistry. And when it's those scenes, I think it's great. When it's more of an action movie as it goes, like especially in the last act, I think it is not as good because I don't think the action plot line is very strong.
Sure.
Or even the action itself is very strong.
Yeah, I felt the same way. I think one of my biggest complaints about it is that I think some of the better jokes were used in the trailer, which
yeah,
is a problem
definitely.
That I think a lot of movies have these days is they try to sell you on certain things by putting them in the trailer, but it kind of just ruins the moment because I think that was like one of the best scenes in the movie overall. They're on like a drug trip and it's so funny, but I think one of the jokes would have hit so much better for us if it wasn't in the trailer, because I think it hit for a lot of other people in the theater that may not have seen it in the trailer. So that was a little bit disappointing. But I think overall, just the buddy comedy aspect of it, their relationship is so funny and cute. And it's just like, Pedro Pascal is amazing in this.
Pedro Pascal steals the show in a movie that's literally about Nick Cage. I mean, he's not, Nicolas Cage is also very good.
Yeah, but yeah, like, if he was really not in this, like, this movie would have fallen so flat.
Because you need his style of comedy is so much different. And so you need that other style to kind of like counteract with the deadpan style, you know? Because Nicolas Cage is so deadpan and like dry. And so Pedro Pascal adds a little bit more, like, I don't know, levity, more obvious comedy to it, they really complement each other very well. I think we both said, like, you could easily rewrite this movie into, like, a road trip movie. And I think that would have been a much better
movie. Related it to something like the Trip series, like, just two guys hanging out, eating food.
Yeah, and I think if it was a road trip movie, there would have been a lot more opportunity for the buddy comedy stuff. Yeah. Because they're, like, always together. Yeah, but it still was funny. You know, it was a good time at the movies. I think it's definitely worth seeing in the theater.
I agree.
At least our crowd was, like, really into it. Well, we saw it on opening night, right? Or, like, at least the second day.
Uh-huh.
So, like, our crowd, that was, like, the most I've heard anyone, like, a movie theater laugh in a long time.
Yeah.
Which obviously depends on who's going, but it definitely hit with who we saw it with.
Yeah.
And then the other one we saw was The Bad Guys, which I hadn't even heard about until, like, that week on Twitter. I saw people talking about it. And this movie slaps. This was really good. I wish it had more, like, press, for sure.
Yeah, I had heard about this one for a while. I'd seen a couple trailers, but I didn't really know a lot about it. Like, I think I had seen a teaser that didn't really tell you much. It was really good. The animation was fun. Like, it is kind of fresh, the way the animation was working and stylized. But I loved it. It was funny in a lot of parts. It was clever. The characters were unique. I think I didn't like the ending as much.
Yeah, well, similar to Zombies, they have to end it with, like, the more, like, propaganda kind of stuff. But until then, it was pretty good in that area. But then the ending was, like, a little bit propaganda-ish.
And then I didn't like Awkwafina in it. Like, I think one of my main issues with animated movies these days, because I love animated movies, is just that they've been choosing voice actors who aren't actually voice actors. They're, like, you know, kind of just bigger name celebrities or people that they can use to get someone to watch their movie. So I think that, like, in her case, I don't think she's a great voice actor. And that was one of my main issues with Raya as well. So I don't know.
No, yeah, I agree. And I think in this movie, there are a lot of like Sam Rockwell, Craig Robinson. So it's like they're also not voice actors, but I think they actually do a pretty good job. I think in her case, her comedy is very, like, both in her facial expressions and also, like, her just, like, body movement and, like, physical comedy elements. And so I think when it's just her voice, it, like, takes out half of the reason that you laugh at her jokes.
Yeah.
You know? Because I think, like, obviously has, like, the problematic elements, but I do think, like, she has made me laugh in movies. I think in The Farewell, she's really funny. I think in Shang-Chi, she was funny. I think, like, her YouTube videos are funny. I just think, like, when you take out that element and just have her voice, I don't think that's what makes her... That's, like, only half of what makes her funny.
Yeah.
And so you lose a lot there. But, I like you said, I think it's really good. I hope parents bring their kids to this movie and not... I mean, I know Sonic 2 is getting good reviews, but, like, this is, like, an original story with great animation style and really funny jokes, characters. And I think, like, parents would, like, we didn't even see it with kids. Like, we saw this movie by ourselves.
I know. it was still and, like, really good.
And so, like, I think parents would actually, like, enjoy this movie rather than, like, just going to bring them to something that they have to, like, sit through. Because also a lot of movies like that that are trying to cater to like kids, but also get stuff for parents, like they want to watch it. It's like you have the jokes for the kids and the jokes for the parents, and they're separate.
Yeah.
But I think the best ones, like this movie, the jokes work for both of them. Like yeah, they're jokes totally. That both parents and kids will think is funny. And that's better because then you have double the amount of jokes. Whereas like in Sing or something like Illumination movie or something like that, you only have like half of the jokes because half of the jokes are for one audience and half of the jokes are for the other audience. Mm-hmm. And so this movie is very good. I really hope that more people go out to see it.
Yeah, and I hope that, like, it comes back around in the Oscar conversation.
Yeah, definitely. I think the animation, like, is worth it for that. Like, it's definitely very inspired by the...
Spider-Man.
Into the Spider-Verse. And even maybe, like, Mitchell's. I'm assuming they watched, like, when they were working on post-production for this and incorporated maybe some of those stylistic elements. Because it has a lot of those different... action mm-hmm. styles, and they kind of switch different styles sometimes. Yeah, very good, and I would recommend it. That's it though. That's all the ones that we're talking about today.
Wow.
A lot of good stuff in there, a lot of stuff maybe that's not so good, but we tried to pick ones that were mostly good.
Yeah.
So our question of the week then is, what is the best movie that you have seen so far this year, whether it be new or old, either one?
Yeah.
And let us know, and we'll read those in the next episode, which is going to be a Marvel doubleheader.
Oh, look man. At that. It's been a while.
Doctor Strange 2 and Moon Knight. Yeah. Talking about both of them. Yeah. Yeah, we did have a good run without any Marvel content.
Yeah, but we're back. It's coming again. But I think both of these things will be fun to talk about.
I agree. Doctor Strange 2 trailers have been looking good. Moon Knight, I've seen not all of yet, but... what I've seen has been like definitely better than the worst Marvel shows. So I think it should be interesting to talk about both of those.
Yep.
Yeah. So you can listen to that on any podcasting platform of your choice. We release episodes on Tuesdays at 10 a.m. You can also find us on all social media platforms. If you just search Secondhand Film Critics, you can find us on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook. So go follow us over there, and while you're looking around, just go leave us a review on either Apple Podcasts or Spotify. A nice 5-star review helps, and we like to read them too. If you have words yeah. on Apple Podcasts, we like reading words.
We like reading leave us good, nice things about ourselves.
Right, nice words, not mean words. But if you have mean words, then you can say the mean words, but
and
maybe
we'll
give
laugh
5 stars.
It, yeah.
Like, if you give 5 stars, but then it's a negative review, you know, it's all good. We just ask, yeah, I think that'll cancel out. Yeah, anything else to say before then?
Nope, I got nothing.
Wow. Well, until next time, I'm Noah.
And I'm Kayla.
And we're your second-hand
film critics.